You are on the line, live on ESPN, 106.7 in Auburn, and Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. Online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins with you on the Friday edition of the show. Happy Friday out there to everybody in the Auburn-Opelika area. If you're up through Birmingham and Sylacauga, across the state of Alabama and across the country, hope you're doing well on this Friday afternoon. It's another hot one. The sun's been in and out of the clouds a little bit today, which has made it a little bit more bearable, but still warm out there, so hopefully you're staying cool, staying safe, and having a great Friday. Congratulations, you made it. The weekend is here, so congratulations. Enjoy your weekend. Hope you have some great plans. Lots of sports going on this weekend, so make sure you strap in and buckle up, because we've got a lot to talk about today. There's a lot to watch this weekend, so park yourself on your couch in your recliner, kick your feet up, and turn the TV on all day, every day, because there's a lot going on this weekend, but there's a lot to talk about on today's show. Yesterday was a great show, and today should be just the same. It should be a great show yet again today, talking a lot more about the Saban-Jimbo Fisher thing, and also what it means and where this is all heading because of this, right? They have brought to light what is happening with NIL. We're going to talk about that some more today here on the Friday edition of On the Line. If you want to call in, be a part of the show, I would love to hear from you. 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. Those are the numbers to put you through to me. You could call in, give me your opinion about anything going on in the sports world. What's your take on all of the Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher fiasco? What do you think about it? Who's right? Who's wrong? Okay, what do you think? I want to hear from you. You can call in. Tell me what you think and what's on your mind. You can call me 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. It's been, also 106 days until college football, just a heads up. We are 106 days away from college football. We'll get to 100 next week. I'm excited. Because once the 100-day mark hits, then you really can start saying, okay, college football, it's coming, right? You can start kind of feeling it a little bit. We're 106 days away from September 3rd, so just keeping you updated on that. But it's now been a day since Jimbo Fisher responded to Nick Saban when the college football world was turned upside down, where Nick Saban gave his comments the night before. Jimbo Fisher called the press conference yesterday in response and blasted Nick Saban and the program and the person that he is. I mean, just crazy what Jimbo Fisher was saying in his press conference. But now that it's been over 24 hours since all of that happened, where do we stand now? What came from all of this? Because some things that we learned about both of these individuals, some things were brought to light about how coaches feel about the NIL and their concerns moving forward. So we've learned a few things, and I think this was an important thing to happen. I don't think necessarily this is the way to do it. You don't want to see two top-tier SEC head football coaches calling each other names on national TV, but I think we've learned a lot from this situation. And how does the college football world respond? How does the NCAA respond? How do schools respond moving forward after all of this happened, right? So we're going to break all of that down here on the Friday edition of On the Line. And look, okay, obviously Nick Saban said what he said. He came out yesterday. He had a Sirius XM radio interview that was already scheduled. How lucky were they to get that interview? They already had it scheduled. Of course, they asked him about it. And Nick Saban came out and apologized. He said, look, I shouldn't have singled anybody out. I'm sorry for that. That's what he said. But he said, what I said about the NIL still stands, and I still believe that. That doesn't change, because what he said is what he meant, and what he said was true. What he said was true. And so in his radio appearance yesterday, he apologized for calling out individuals as the likes of Jimbo Fisher, Deion Sanders, you know, University of Miami, those individuals and schools and programs that he specifically called out. He said, I should have done it that way. I apologize. So he did apologize for doing that. But he didn't retract the statement. He actually backed it up and doubled down on his statements about the NIL. Okay, so that is where we stand on that. Obviously, Saban and Jimbo are extremely mad. Big rivalry, right? They do not like each other. And Jimbo Fisher had his words to say about Nick Saban, about what he said, about his career with Nick Saban. A lot of emotions bottled up inside from Jimbo that I think he just finally let loose about Nick Saban, because he was hot yesterday in his press conference. And it wasn't just about what Nick Saban had said. He started going in and talking about Nick Saban's coaching career, when Jimbo worked under Coach Saban. Like, he was going a long way back with the things that he was saying. So, if you ask me, it came off kind of childish, what Jimbo was doing. I understand why he was mad. But as I said yesterday, I think he misunderstood what Nick Saban was saying. He misunderstood. He was mad, and that's okay, because Saban had his word or his name and his program in his mouth, right? You understand that. But Jimbo thought that Saban was calling him a cheater. Saban never said that, okay? Saban never said that. He just said that Texas A&M bought all their players, which is kind of true. It's kind of true. Texas A&M did not do it themselves. We had a great conversation with Chris Gordy yesterday. I'm going to replay that interview today at 2:30, because if you missed that phone call, it was a great, great phone call with him. Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC. He had a lot of good points about all of this. We had him on the show yesterday, so I'm going to replay that interview for you, for any of y'all that missed that. But he had some great points about this as well. I've got a phone call. Let me go grab that. We'll get him on the air. I'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to On the Line. Please stay tuned as we take this phone call. You may get involved as well. Call 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Let's head to the phone lines. 334-321-1390. Ed, always nice to hear from you, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good today. I just wanted to, you know, I wanted you to please back up a little bit in your idol worship of Nick Saban a little bit, okay? Nick Saban is the one who brought all of this about. He is the one who started. We've got to, you know, he is responsible for the situation that we are in as much or probably more than anybody in the nation. He is the coach that brought on this culture, okay? And him coming back and apologizing, let me tell you, he probably had the legal department at Bama on his, you got to apologize. What he said was, you know, you don't do what he did. What he, and what, the reason he was doing it, just like you, he was at alumni business thing speaking, trying to beg for more money was what he was trying to do so that he could pay more than Texas A&M. And to make it like he is some kind of, that he is trying to do something right, it's just so absurd for me to listen to. And I love your show, and I love you, man, but man, come on. All right.
Well, Ed, you know, look, I'm not saying he didn't do anything wrong, because he did. He shouldn't have gone the way that he did, but I appreciate the call, Ed. If I lost you, I apologize. But look, I'm not saying that Saban didn't do anything wrong, and there's no doubt that schools like Alabama have a history of doing what they got to do to get the players that they want, right? And you're 100% right. He was at an event trying to get more money because he knows he can't compete with Texas A&M when it comes to the money. So you're 100% right. Now, what he's saying, though, when he talks about the NIL and what it's becoming and what it was created for, is the complete opposite of what it actually is. I'm saying he's right. But I'm not saying that Saban's 100% innocent and everybody should get off of him. And you know what I'm saying? I'm not saying that. So if that's how it comes off, I apologize. But what I'm saying is Nick Saban's words, it was a seven-minute question that he answered, right? It was a seven-minute answer. The first 5 minutes of it was 100% correct what he said. But then when he started going after people, no, that's not okay. You can't do that. And you're right. I'm sure Alabama was on him about it. And I'm sure he had to make it a public apology. But at the same time, you're also correct. Alabama is one of the reasons we're in this type of situation because we know that they do what they got to do to get players. And they're going to pay however much money now, especially that it's legal. They're going to try and get as much money as possible from those exact business owners that Saban was speaking to. They're going to try and get as much money as possible because now you truly can buy players. You can do that. That's what it is. That's not what it was created to do, but that's what you can do. And so you're right. Alabama's right there at the center of it. But I don't think that's what Nick Saban truly wanted with NIL. Maybe it was, and he's just going to say the opposite and never admit that. I'm not sure. But I'm not saying that he didn't do anything wrong and that he is, you know, everybody should get off of him a little bit. He has a right to be upset, but at the same time, Alabama's still going to be Alabama. They're still going to do what they want to do. They're still going to get some of the best players. You'll see a little bit of a drop-off, but it's not going to be so drastic that Nick Saban just can't compete in college football anymore. But I'm not saying, oh, we need to feel bad for old little Nick Saban. That's not what I'm saying at all. It's not what I'm saying. What he did was wrong. When he started calling out people, probably shouldn't have done that, right? Probably shouldn't have done that, especially against Jimbo Fisher, a former assistant, an SEC head coach, a guy that you've got to see in meetings for the next couple of months, and a guy that you got to meet on the football field October 8th. Probably not what you wanted to do, right? Especially going after Deion Sanders at Jackson State. Like, come on, man. What was that about? You didn't have to do that. There's no room or reason for that. But that's kind of out of pocket for him. Every now and then we see something like this from Nick Saban where he kind of goes off. When he gets heated about something, he kind of goes off on these little rants like that. But it's very, very rare because he's so toned in and he's so smart and so good at what he does that he normally doesn't do these things. But as you heard Jimbo talk about in his response, he showed his true colors. Now, is that true? I don't know. We don't know him like that. I don't know him like that, obviously. Most of us don't. But to Ed, you know, to wrap up the phone call with Ed, I appreciate you calling in, Ed. Look, I'm not saying that he didn't do anything wrong. I'm not trying to praise Nick Saban. You know, that's not what I'm doing. But what he was saying about the NIL is correct. Whether he's part of the reason or not, what he was saying was correct. The way that NIL is going is not good. It's going to ruin college football. I've been saying it. And now that other people are saying, and other people have been saying it too, I'm not saying I was the only one, but the way that NIL is going is not a good thing. This is not what it was created to do. And that's what he's saying. He's saying something's got to be done. And what he said was totally fine and true. Now, going after other people, not cool, man. Not cool. Don't do that. Especially in that situation where, like Ed just said, and Jimbo said, he said, right before that, wasn't he just begging for more money? Basically, he was. That's what he was doing there. They were asking for more money. It was him and Nate Oates, the Alabama basketball coach. They're there asking for more money because they know where college athletics are going. They know where they're going. So that's exactly what they were doing, was they're asking for more money because they know that they need it to compete with schools like Texas and Texas A&M. You think it's bad now? The other rich school in the country, Texas, is coming to the SEC too. So how do you compete, right? How do you compete with that? Ed, I appreciate your call. You can call and be a part of the show as well. 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. I love hearing what you have to say and what you think about the whole situation. What do you think about what I'm saying about it? I would love to hear from you. You can call and be a part of the show at any time today. 334-321-1390. And so now that it's over and they've had some time and we've had some time to kind of sit and think about it and soak in it for a little bit, who was right and who was wrong. I think both of them were right. That's like kind of what I was just saying. Saban was right in what he was saying, but Jimbo was also right to come out and respond and say, don't come at us like that. We didn't do anything wrong. And again, that's not what Saban was saying, but I'm glad that Jimbo said those things because, yeah, people are going to, you know, people are already going after Texas A&M, myself included, because, you know, in the last 4 years, A&M has got like 2 or 3 5-stars. All of a sudden, NIL becomes a thing. They signed 7 5-stars in one class. They've got the highest rated recruiting class in the history of college football. That's not a coincidence. Texas A&M has more money than almost any school in the country, and they have it to offer. And it's not just the school. That's a big thing, too. That's a big thing, too. You got to separate this. The school itself is not paying the athletes, okay? Texas A&M is not paying that 5-star to come play. The businesses and the donors to Texas A&M are paying that player, but it basically is Texas A&M, right? It's basically the school, and that goes for any other school. Doesn't matter if it's Auburn, Bama, Kentucky, I don't care. The school itself is not supposed to be paying the player. Doesn't mean they're not, but they're not supposed to be, and there's really no reason for them to because now that NIL is legal, there's no reason for the school to be doing that. There's no doubt that it happened in the past, but there's no reason to do that anymore. Go to a business or a donor and say, hey, we need this much money, fork it over, and they're going to do it. So the school doesn't have to pay money, right? But the conversations are, well, Texas A&M, or, you know, Jackson State paid a kid $1 million to come play there. No, they didn't. No, they didn't. Donors paid $1 million for that player to come play there. And you may be saying, well, that's basically the same thing. Yes, it is. But there is a fine line there. So you have to keep it separate. Because if the school starts paying players, that's not legal. The boosters and the donors can do that, though, right? So there is a fine line. So I want to make sure we keep that separate. But Jimbo came out yesterday and said, we have not done anything wrong. We haven't cheated. We haven't lied. We haven't broken the rules. We're doing what we are capable of doing. Basically, he said, we have more money than you, so get over it. And I would, too. Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you do that? If you're in Jimbo Fisher's, if you're in his coaching position and this brand new NIL rule comes along where basically your donors and your school can produce enough money to throw at recruits and convince them to come play at your school and you have more money than everybody else, wouldn't you use that to your advantage? I would. You'd be stupid not to. You would be stupid not to. So Jimbo and Texas A&M aren't doing anything wrong. Now, is it going to work long term? We're going to find out. We're going to find out. But as I've told you, these kids' mentalities are going to start changing. It's not going to be about football anymore. They're not going to care about football or sports in general anymore. They're going to say, where can I make the most money? Where can I make the most money? That's what they're going to be worried about. And in college football, it's going to be Texas and Texas A&M. Are they going to win games? Who knows? Eventually, they probably will, because you would say that Nick Saban's a better head coach than Jimbo Fisher. But if Jimbo Fisher starts getting the best recruits like Alabama has with Nick Saban, eventually, Jimbo's a decent enough coach, he's going to start winning some games, right? He's going to start winning some games if you start getting the absolute best players in the world. So, eventually, they're going to start winning, maybe, but they're not going to care. They want the money. Kids are going to want the money. And that's what Nick Saban was saying yesterday, too. He was saying kids that have grown up or want to come to Alabama, they're not going to come here anymore because we can't compete with NIL money with other schools. And that's true. It's 100% true. And I said this yesterday, I'm going to say it again. You think Alabama's in that situation? Auburn's in a much worse spot when it comes to that situation. We'll talk about that on the other side of this break. Give me a call, 334-321-1390. We're off and rolling here on the Friday edition of On the Line.
Retired.
Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Jacob Goins with you on the Friday edition of the show. I had a phone call, and I was about to answer. It looks like you're still there. Let me go answer that real quick. I'll put him on the air. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to On the Line. Please stay tuned as we take this phone call. You may get involved as well. Call 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
All right, let's head to the phone lines, 334-321-1390. Terry is in here. How you doing, Terry?
Doing great, Jack. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. What you got for me?
I know there's been a lot of talk about, you know, the Saban Fisher stuff, and I don't know that Saban's as big a crook as some people think, but I think the alumni is very crooked. I think they went all the way to Hawaii and got Tua Tagovailoa, and I can tell you for a fact that his little brother did not want to go there. Case in point. As soon as he was gone, where is he at now?
He went to Maryland.
Yeah, I heard of many confrontations he had in the hallway or different places with his father because he didn't want to be promised Alabama. He wanted to go where he wanted. But it's easy to skip from Hawaii to Tuscaloosa when your dad's got a six-figure job at Mercedes waiting on him.
Yeah.
Why is that not talked? That needs to be talked about. There's way more evidence there than what, you know, the Cam Newton stuff, which dominated the radio waves across the state and the southeast.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they talked about it a little bit. Definitely not as much as, you know, like you said, like a Cam Newton situation. I don't know how much hard evidence there is of that. You know, I'm not 100% on what was actually, you know, said and what deal, quote unquote deal, would have been made for either one of them. You know, I think it's probably in the past. Obviously, it's in the past at this point, so I don't know if they would really bring it up.
Well, trust me, those Alabama boosters are real good at covering their tracks. So that's just hard for me. Oftentimes, we've heard Honolulu is referred to what? Paradise. Now, why would you leave Paradise to go to Tuscaloosa, Alabama?
Well, Nick Saban's in Tuscaloosa.
Exactly. I mean, I just don't think he's talked about near enough. And look, what's he upset about the most? Probably because somebody's fixing to beat him in his own game, and they're going to figure out something else. He's the greatest of all time. We all know that. But I think Nick Saban and the University of Alabama is the perfect combination. I think he's a great coach and a great program. And that's just the way it is. Because if the guy was a successful coach, he would have won it. I really thought he was going to give the NFL another try because he might be in a failure. And that's what he was at the Miami Dolphins. You know, he was very average
right.
to failure. And in Michigan State, he wasn't particularly good. But he got it done at LSU and got it done at Alabama.
Yeah.
I mean, Jacob, how hard is it getting done in Alabama? Mike Dubose won the SEC title in Alabama. Hello.
Yeah, but I mean, he's taking it to a whole nother level, man.
He has, in a time where nobody thought he could do it.
Yeah, exactly. He came in at one of the lowest points in Alabama football history, and look what he's done.
Well, and I feel sorry for the guy, whoever it is, that replaces him in another 5 years, probably.
You're absolutely right.
Kind of like I'm old enough to remember when Ray Perkins came in and replaced Bear Bryant. I said, well, bless his heart. He's going to need it.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know. I would do it if they paid me $2 million. I would lose some games for $2 million, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
Terry, we appreciate the call, man.
Take care, Jacob.
That was Terry here on the Friday edition of On the Line. Look, Alabama has become a football dynasty because of Nick Saban. He's a great coach, obviously. I mean, you can't deny it. I don't care who you're a fan of. You can't deny that. But, Terry, you're exactly right. Saban is upset because this is a new way for other schools to beat him. And he's been great for so long, and he's been the best for so long, that the NIL is just another way for other programs and head coaches to get an advantage on him. And, look, that scares him. That's okay. He's so good, and he's been good for so long. Threats to his greatness and his legacy and his success, yeah, it's going to scare him a little bit. That's just human. That's normal, right? But what has Nick Saban done every single time something like this happens? A major rule change happens. He comes out. He raises all kinds of cane about it, and he tells them, you need to watch out for this. I'm warning you about this. The rule goes into effect. What does Nick Saban do? He adjusts, and he beats you at your own game. He's going to do what he's got to do. But I don't know if he can do it with the NIL, because there's only so much money that boosters and donors and everybody else want to donate, because there's going to be a point, the difference at Alabama, Texas A&M, Auburn below both of those, there's going to be a point where all of these people that are donating money or signing NIL deals or offering money for NIL deals for players to come in, there's going to be a point where, let's take Auburn for example, there's going to be a point where those donors and companies, they say, why are we doing this? We can't compete with those other schools, so why am I going to keep forking over more money every single year? And that's what it's going to be. These coaches and programs and athletic directors are going to have to ask for more money every single year. And there's going to be a point where they quit giving it because they realize it's pointless. There's some things you just can't compete with, and that's money. Some schools in some areas and some states just have more money than others, and you can't compete with that. And so I think eventually that's where Auburn is going to fall short, because I think that's where Alabama could fall short as well, because Texas and Texas A&M in the SEC have the most money. They do. They have the most money out of the states and the schools in the SEC. They have the most. And so I think that's where Alabama and Nick Saban will struggle. That's why I think Nick Saban retires at the end of this contract. I also think that's where Auburn's going to struggle, because the companies and the donors and whoever that gives money for NIL deals or offers up NIL solutions, they're finally going to realize, doesn't matter how much we donate, because whatever we get to, that school is just going to up it even more. You can't compete with money, folks. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll listen to the Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC interview from yesterday. Stay tuned. You don't want to miss it. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Jacob Goins with you on the Friday edition of the show. 30 minutes into hour number one. It's been a great show so far. Lots to talk about. We've been talking about the Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher fiasco that has gone down over the last couple of days. If you missed the show yesterday, we talked to Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC, had a phone call with him about everything going on. It was a fantastic interview. I'm going to play it for you right now, because if you didn't hear it, it was fantastic. If you did, you probably missed something. There was a lot of good information in there. So I'm going to play that. So sit back and relax and enjoy Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC. Chris, man, there's some stuff to talk about today around the SEC, huh?
Yeah, there really is, and it's interesting because, you know, we hear the comments from Nick Saban last night. I get a text from my buddy at A&M this morning and says, dude, Jimbo Fisher just announced a 10 a.m. impromptu press conference to address the comments from Saban last night. And now, and I'm certainly not trying to get any of your listeners to tune out, but as we speak, Nick Saban is on Sirius XM right now, which was an already scheduled interview with Jacob Hester and those guys on the College Sports Channel on Sirius XM.
Yeah,
but I'm a little disappointed because the quotes I'm reading right now from Nick Saban, he's kind of starting to crab walk this thing back, and I don't like that. Come on, Nick, stand by your comment.
Well, definitely nobody tune away. Go find the comments after our show. But Chris, I definitely want to get your thoughts on this whole situation. First, with what Nick Saban had to say last night. Look, it was about a 7-minute clip of him answering some questions about the NIL. And really, in the first 5 minutes, I agreed with what he had to say before he started going in on Texas A&M and others. What do you think about what he said before those comments?
Yeah, obviously, like, he makes a lot of good points. Like, it's not, you know, a lot of the stuff he was saying was not off base. So I want to say that. But I think what it comes across as, and this is a big debate I've had with my my co-host here in Houston on my show that I do here, is that any kind of pushback on this sounds like you don't want the players to be paid, and that's the problem. You know, with a lot of this, is it's that if you push back at all, it sounds like you're not for players to be paid. Therefore, you're a terrible human being. And by the way, all these coaches make millions and millions and millions of dollars. So I get where people are coming from with that. But David's right. I mean, there has to be some kind of legislation. The NCAA, and he even cited this in his speech. He says, you know, the transfer portal became a thing because all these kids kept coming back saying, well, why won't you let me transfer? I don't want to have to sit out a year. The NCAA was kind of like, oh, because we said so. And so then they went and got lawyers and started litigation, and guess what the NCAA said? Oh, we don't want to deal with lawsuits. Yeah, yeah, transfer portal. You guys can go anywhere you want anytime. So it's kind of the same thing with the NIL. Like, that for years, the conferences and schools were saying, look, NCAA, let's come up with a system. Let's come up with a way to do this. And the NCAA kept saying, oh, we don't really know. We don't want to be responsible for this. Just NIL, name, image, and likeness. You can do whatever you want. One of the stipulations in the NIL was, it's in the very small fine print, is you're not supposed to use name, image, and likeness for recruiting. Well, that's fine. But you're holding the schools to that standard. You're not holding boosters to that standard. You're not holding collectives to that standard. And so what's happened here is we know what's happened. A&M was ahead of the eight ball with everybody. They built up a collective with their boosters. They raised a ton of money. And before National Signing Day, they went out and got every big four- and five-star recruit in the country, and they paid them through the collective. Texas A&M did not pay the kids. The collective did, which is filled up with a bunch of Aggie diehards and boosters and whatever. So when Jimbo Fisher got up there on signing day and said, I don't know what you're talking about, NIL, I never paid a kid a dime. No money exchanged hands here. Well, he was right. And I thought that's where Saban was a little bit, last night where he said, well, A&M, they got all these top recruits. They paid every one of them. Again, A&M did not pay them. The A&M collective paid them. And this is where we get into semantics, right? And that's where everybody's like, well, again, I get it. The A&M, the school, did not pay him. Jimbo Fisher, the coach, did not pay them. But he certainly had some kind of hand in those kids coming to that school. And so that's where the dispute is. A lot of people are saying today, why is Saban whining? Look, Saban's not whining. If you go back to 2014, Saban was the one who was running ground and pound, play dominant defense, run the ball down your throat, and have a game manager at quarterback, whether it was A.J. McCarron or, whoever, all the different quarterbacks that have come through Alabama. He said, look, if y'all want to go spread up-tempo offense, fine. If that's the way you want to go, that's how we'll adjust. Saban put the college football world on notice. He went out and started getting the fastest big-time players, running the spread, big-time quarterbacks. He's never looked back. Tua Tagovailoa, Bryce Young. I mean, it's been one quarterback after another has been a stud, throwing for a ton of yards, winning Heisman trophies and all this stuff. So I think what Saban did last night was he kind of put the rest of the college football world on notice, saying, hey, if this is the rules y'all want to play by, we'll certainly dive into the NIL deal. Keep in mind, he was speaking to a group of about 60 business owners in Birmingham last night, and those are the guys listening. He had their antennas up saying, hey, this is the rules we play by now. You guys, y'all have done a great job of writing checks before, but guess what? You got to write bigger checks now, because that's what it's going to take with A&M doing what they're doing and everybody else doing what they're doing. So, yeah, I don't buy into the whole thing where everybody's saying Saban was being a crybaby, because, look, he doesn't need to be. He still had the number two recruiting class. I mean, people were like, oh, you're just upset because A&M's stealing recruits. Last I checked, Jimbo did not steal any recruits from Nick Saban this recruiting cycle. Alabama got every kid that they wanted. They ended up with the number two recruiting class. Okay, A&M was one, great. But that was with A&M combing the whole country, trying to get, pay for every kid that they could through the collective. Whereas it sounds like at least Alabama and Saban weren't doing that yet. But if they weren't doing that and they got the number two recruiting class, guess what? If they're going to dip their hand into the NIL now with the collectives and stuff, then fully expect Alabama to be number one in recruiting again next year.
Well, Chris, it sounds like you've been listening to my show, because everything you just said is something that I touched on as well. So I'm really glad that you came on and were able to say a lot of those same things. So Nick Saban had his comments last night. And then, of course, like you said, Jimbo Fisher called an impromptu emergency press conference at 10 o'clock this morning, and he came storming in and had a very explosive response to what Nick Saban had to say. Your thoughts on Jimbo Fisher's response to Nick Saban?
Yeah, I get where Jimbo's coming from. I mean, that's to be expected that that's going to be his response, but I also thought it was a little bit petty. I thought Jimbo came a little bit punching under the belt with saying, oh, he's got tons of, or however he said it, well, I'll tell you where the bodies are buried or whatever. basically hinting like Saban's been doing dirty stuff for years. And look, it's not surprising. Saban has been known for years. He runs his assistants into the ground. After about 2 years, you want to get the hell out of there because he's worked the hell out of you and
yep.
and all that kind of stuff. That's why, you know, it's not for long when you work under Saban. That's why it was so crazy that Kirby Smart spent as many years as he did. He eventually got out under it. He's created his own thing, and look at Kirby. He's a reigning national champion. So, but that said, it seems like there's no love lost between Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban. And was all, what was already becoming a little bit of a rivalry with A&M beating Alabama last year, man, it is certainly heated up. And so I'm going to be real curious to see where this goes moving forward because, you know, as somebody texted me this morning, they said, yeah, go ahead and take whatever the points are that Alabama's favored by in Tuscaloosa this year and give me Bama minus whatever because I think they're going to beat the snot out of A&M this year just to prove a point. And, you know, I joked this morning, the one guy kicking himself right now is Haynes King, who projects to be A&M starting quarterback on, good Lord, I'm going to get my brains beaten by Will Anderson and Dallas Turner in that game because Nick Saban's going to have us fired up, you know, have them fired up ready to sack the heck out of them. And so, yeah, it's going to be interesting. But I thought Jimbo was came across a little preachy because, again, while Jimbo can keep saying, we never paid any players, we understand that, but to act like, you're completely oblivious. Hey, whatever our collective does, I have nothing to do with that. Yeah, okay. So you're telling me the head coach has nothing to do with what these boosters or collectives are offering legally, by the way, to recruits out there. I just find that to be a little bit hard to believe. But, yeah, if Jimbo walks into his office on signing day and goes, wait, who we get, guys? Oh, great, we got a bunch of five stars. That seems very naive to believe that.
Talking to Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC, the way that it came off was – that Jimbo Fisher, in the ways that he was talking, was that he came off in a way that Nick Saban was saying he was cheating and that A&M was you know, breaking the rules. But A&M's not doing that at all. They're just taking advantage of the one thing that they have, which is money, right?
Yeah, and I think Saban was saying it more that he was frustrated because the spirit of NIL when it first came out, or at least the rule was, you weren't supposed to use it to influence recruiting. And again, some of these schools have found workarounds with the collectives that, again, A&M, if they go and investigate, the NCAA investigates, I expect A&M to come up squeaky clean because they're going to say, well, yeah, it wasn't Jimbo or the school paying them. It was the collective of, you know, Aggie alums. That's totally within the realm of NIL. But I think what we keep missing with NIL is name, image, and likeness is supposed to be for the kids who are really already on campus, the kids who are profiting off of making themselves a name. I had somebody bring up about, what about Bryce Young? Well, yeah, Bryce Young hadn't started yet, but Bryce Young had already been on campus. We already kind of knew Bryce Young was going to be the starter for Alabama. We already knew his name. He played in spot duty behind Mac Jones, and he became the guy, and he got a big NIL deal. Where I have a hard problem with is, you know, we're turning this into paying for recruits, and you're going out and signing a big recruiting class of 17-year-olds who've never played it down in college football. We don't even know their names yet, but we're giving them name, image, and likeness money because we want to stack recruiting classes and bring in a bunch of five stars. That's not exactly what NIL is supposed to be, and that's where the gray area is. But
right.
I don't know how you change it. I mean, I don't know how you fix that other than to say, look, guys, NIL, you have to be on campus to get an NIL deal. I understand they can go to recruits and say, well, look, we'll just sign this piece of paper. We'll definitely give you an NIL deal and get on campus. They could certainly do that. But I think if we want to go down this territory, because I've had a lot of people say, what's wrong with it? If I want to pay my hard-earned money to pay a recruit to come to the school, why can't I? Then create that. Call it pay for recruiting and make that a new system. So we'll have name, image, and likeness, and we'll also have pay for recruiting, where if you want to go, you know, put your hard-earned dollars in the pocket of a 17-year-old and hope he pans out, then more power to you. But that's not what name, image, and likeness is supposed to be.
Talking to Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC, that's a great way to put it. I mean, when you really think about, and that's sort of what Nick Saban was talking about last night, was this is not what NIL was created to do. It was not created to recruit. It was, like you just said, it was created to benefit the players who were on campus, on teams, to have them make a little bit of money due to their name, image, and likeness. But it really has turned into a recruiting tool, and so, you know, how did it get to this point, right? How did it, in your mind, how did it get from a great system for players to make a little bit of money to schools paying millions of dollars for high school recruits?
Well, paying recruits to come to schools is nothing new. I mean, go back and watch the movie Blue Chips. Go back and read the stories of, SMU, why they even got on probation. It's because they're paying money. You know, it's It's all these different stories throughout the years of guys who've gotten paid to go play at schools, but a lot of those were done in the dark. They were done behind closed doors where the booster, you know, slides you a packet full of money in the parking lot and says, shh, take this. You know, that's what this has been for years and years and years. With NIL, I think boosters and a lot of supporters of athletic programs said, this is a great way to just do it out in the open. This will be completely legal. And I think when they NCAA instituted the NIL rules, they didn't think about that aspect. They were thinking more, and for years, the NIL deals were Johnny Manziel. You know, he was a superstar in all college football as a freshman. Couldn't sell any merchandise, couldn't sign any endorsement deals to promote his brand all whole time he's at A&M. Same thing with Tim Tebow at Florida. Same thing with Tyrann Mathieu, the Honey Badger. I remember at LSU, he created these T-shirts with the Honey Badger on the front, purple and gold, and on the back it said number 7. And the NCAA stepped in immediately and said, no, you can't sell those. That's got your jersey number on it. It's like, guys, what are we doing here? We're literally limiting this 20-year-old from trying to profit off of his name, his image, his likeness that he has created, and you're telling him no. That's what the spirit of NIL is supposed to be. You know, I throw out another example. My wife went to the University of Kentucky. There was a local grocery store in Kentucky who wanted to pay to have the gymnastics team out to sign autographs for little kids. Paid each member of the gymnastics team $100 to come out and sign autographs. It's not much, but it's great if you're a 19, 20-year-old kid in college and you don't make anything and all you have is your food stipend and your scholarship. It's a great way to put extra money in your pocket. So that's the spirit of NIL. You know, even the kid at Bijan Robinson at Texas who signed with a Lamborghini dealership and they're giving him a Lamborghini and giving him extra money and all that. That's fine. That is all in the spirit and under the umbrella of NIL. He's made a name for himself, and he's profiting off of the name, image, and likeness. Now, here's my problem with that and recruiting. Arch Manning is already a big name. Arch Manning is already a household name everywhere you go. You could argue Arch Manning from day one should be paid a name, image, and likeness deal, and I can't argue against that. So that's where I have the problem where how do you restrict it from – you know, big money booster at A&M who says, I just want the best recruiting class and I want all the 5 stars and I don't even know these kids' names. Just let me write a check and go get me all the 5 stars versus actually paying a kid who has created a name for himself, who has a brand already and say, yeah, let's bring in Arch Manning and give him an NIL deal because he already has a name. I don't know how you differentiate it, but again, something's going to have to give because for years and years, these boosters have just been behind closed doors flipping the money to recruits. Now they could do it out in the open, and there's no restriction on it. I don't know how you get a hold of it.
Well, Chris, there's no doubt that it has gotten out of control, and when two of the biggest coaches in the SEC and in college football start going at each other because of this one idea and one topic, in my mind, it comes off that there's a problem and something has got to change, but I mean, who knows what that's going to be? There's a lot more to talk about that. We're up against a break. Chris, I appreciate you and your time. As always, let everybody know where they can keep up with you and all your great work with Locked On SEC.
Yeah, just wherever you get your podcasts, I encourage everybody to go to our YouTube page. Just search Locked On SEC. We've got a great video up there today with a couple of our guys, host of Locked On Bama, host of Locked On Aggies, kind of going at it back and forth, arguing both sides of it. So it's a lot of fun, a lot of fodder, and a topic that won't be going away anytime soon.
Absolutely. Chris, again, I appreciate you and your time. I'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Sounds good, man.
Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins wrapping up hour number one here on the Friday edition of On the Line. If you want to call in, be a part of the show, let me know what you think about this entire Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher, NIL situation. We've had a couple of phone calls today. They've been fantastic. I'd love for you to call in and be a part of the show as well. You can give me a call, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. You can call in, give me your thoughts on anything going on in the sports world as well. But as we wrap up hour number one, just want to give you an update on Auburn baseball. They are in their series against Kentucky. Their game last night got postponed to today due to weather. So they're actually playing a doubleheader against Kentucky today. They're playing game one right now. And game two will be at 5 o'clock, according to the Auburn website. So Game one going on right now, and Auburn struggling early here in game one. They're trailing Kentucky 4-0 in the top of the sixth inning here in game one of the doubleheader this afternoon. Kentucky scored one in the first, one in the second, and two in the fourth, as Auburn currently trails the Kentucky Wildcats 4-0 at top of the fourth inning. So Auburn, no runs on just one hit. Kentucky with four runs and six hits already. So Auburn struggling a little bit out of the gates here. Really need to get a series win. You'd like to see the sweep, but you know, you really, what you're looking for in this game now, you're down 4-0. You've got three innings to go. You're looking to get a little bit of momentum. Maybe if you can come back and win, obviously that would be great. But you're looking to build some momentum here in this first game. Get your win back in game two. Win the game three tomorrow. Win the series. Because if you're Auburn, this is a series you need. You need the wins. You need the RPI ranking points and all of that. So if you're Auburn, these are wins that you have to get against Kentucky. And right now, they trail the Wildcats 4-0 in the top of the sixth in game one, the game that was postponed from yesterday. So Auburn baseball currently trailing Kentucky 4-0. Auburn softball kicks off their regional action today against Louisiana. Auburn technically the home team out in Clemson today against Atlanta. And they currently lead Louisiana 3-2. Auburn on top 3-2 against Atlanta in the bottom of the fourth. Auburn trailed 1-0 in the top of the first. They came up to bat. They put on two runs in the bottom of the first. And then Louisiana tied it up. Bree Ellis had her 19th home run of the season. The Auburn softball freshman home run record, 19th of the year. She hits a two-run shot to make it 2-1 Auburn. Louisiana tied it up in the second. And Auburn has since taken a 3-2 lead over Louisiana in game one of the NCAA regional action out in Clemson. South Carolina. So good update from Auburn softball so far. Again, on top of Louisiana, 3-2 in the fourth inning. Auburn baseball trailing Kentucky 4-0 in game one in the top of the sixth inning. Well, that's pretty much going to do it here for hour number one of the Friday edition of On the Line. Stay tuned. Hour number two coming up. We'll have making headlines and more conversations about Saban and Jimbo. Stay tuned.
On the Line, live on ESPN, 106.7 in Auburn and Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. Online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins with you on the Friday edition of the show. Hour number one officially in the books. You know what that means. Hour number two officially underway here on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 up through Birmingham and Sylacauga. Hope you're all doing well on this cloudy Friday afternoon. Don't be fooled, it's still hot outside. So hope you're doing well, staying cool, and staying safe. If you're still here from hour number one, I appreciate you. If you're just now tuning in, I appreciate you as well. If you missed any of hour number one, just search On the Line. Wherever you get your podcast, you can find the podcast immediately following today's show. Just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. It was a great first hour. I expect nothing less here in hour number two. If you want to call in and be a part of the show, I would love to hear from you. Anything on your mind in the sports world, Auburn football, baseball, softball, Saban and Jimbo, PGA Championship, anything you want to talk about, baseball, hockey, basketball, there's a lot going on in the sports world. You can call in, be a part of the show, and give me your thoughts, questions, concerns, anything going on in the sports world. I want to hear from you, the listener, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. Let's start hour number two, like we always do, with making headlines. And Auburn baseball, in their first game of the series against Kentucky, last night got postponed due to weather, so they pushed it back to today. They're playing a doubleheader, and game one is currently underway right now up in Lexington. Auburn trailing Kentucky 4-0 in the sixth inning. It was the top of the sixth last time I looked. It's still the top of the sixth. Auburn down 4-0 to Kentucky in game one of a doubleheader against the Wildcats. They trail Kentucky 4-0, Auburn baseball does, in game one of a three-game series. Game two will be tonight at 5 o'clock in Lexington. Auburn trying to pick up some much-needed wins before heading to Hoover next week and before trying to host not just a regional, but also the super regional if they were to win that. So as of right now, they are projected to host a regional and the super regional, but if they drop some games to Kentucky, that may not be the case anymore. So trying to come back, win game one. You definitely have to win this series if you're Auburn, if you want to think about hosting not just the regional, but the super regional on top of that. Moving on with making headlines, Auburn softball gets underway in the NCAA regional today in South Carolina over at Clemson, and they are underway against Louisiana. Auburn currently on top of the Raging Cajuns 3-2 in the top of the fifth inning. Auburn is considered the home team in this matchup, so Louisiana is up to bat right now. But Auburn up 3-2 on top of Louisiana as Louisiana took a 1-0 lead. And then in the bottom of the first, Bree Ellis hit her freshman softball Auburn record setting. Wow, that was a weird way to word that. Bree Ellis hit her 19th home run of the year, the Auburn single season freshman record. How about that? That sounded a little bit better. She hit a two-run shot in the first inning to take a 2-1 lead. Louisiana scored one in the top of the second. Auburn then scored one in the bottom of the third. And that is where we have a 3-2 lead for Auburn on top of Louisiana in game one of the NCAA regionals out in Clemson, South Carolina. Top of the fifth inning, Auburn on top, 3-2 in softball. Moving on with making headlines, Auburn football in the mix of all of the craziness in college football yesterday. Auburn picked up a transfer portal player, another transfer portal player, if you will, and he's a good one, folks. He's a good one. Auburn picked up the Memphis defensive lineman, Morris Joseph, from the transfer portal. He came in, he is 6'2", 275 pounds. He's got some skill. He has a little bit of experience, not a whole lot, but he's another player that Brian Harsin and this coaching staff pick up out of the transfer portal. He's probably one of those guys that can come in, get some reps, but his playing time can increase as he goes on. And in his 2 years with Memphis, he played in all of their games, both seasons, all 14 games in 2019 and all 11 games in 2020, and totaled 10 tackles for Memphis. So, you know, he had 9 starts last year and recorded 38 tackles on the season. So, look, he's a big guy. He'll be a very good interior defensive front type of player. I think he can be a big impact. But again, he's another player that Auburn football has picked up out of the portal that we weren't really expecting to get, right? Not that we weren't, you know, it's not that we weren't thinking we couldn't get him. We just didn't really know what Auburn was going after in the portal. And now they've gone out and they've gotten, I mean, this is the third player we've seen in just the past few weeks. So Auburn is doing just fine in the portal. And, you know, I talk all the time how at this point, how good and how impactful are the players you're getting in the portal right now? Look, like I say, probably not a day one starter, but a guy that you can mold into what you want him to be because he already has Division I reps. He knows how to play. You probably don't have to teach him a whole lot. Now you get to mold him into the player you want him to be, and he obviously should fit Auburn's system or else they wouldn't have gone after him. So I think this is a great pickup for Auburn. He's a big guy, 6'2", 275 pounds. That's a good size dude playing on the defensive line. So I think he's going to be great. I really do. I think he's going to be a great pickup for Auburn. We'll see how he pans out. But I like Auburn going after a guy like him. So we'll see, but Auburn again, they picked up quite a few guys in the portal. And besides the wide receiver from Miami, who I just don't know where he's going to fit until way on down the road, I think the guys that Auburn has picked up from the portal have been really good players and really good potential players. They have a lot of potential is what I'm trying to say. So another great pickup for Auburn football. You get a defensive lineman. The defense is already pretty stacked as it is. You just add more depth. That's all you're doing. You're adding more depth on your defense, and this can only be good for Auburn football. So picks up another transfer portal player from Memphis, a defensive lineman. Moving on with making headlines, the PGA Championship in golf, the second major of the year, round two, right in the middle of it. And Justin Thomas at 6 under par. He is in the clubhouse at 6 under par. He leads the way at the PGA Championship, followed by Zalatoris at 5 under, McIlroy at 4 under. And he just sank a putt trying to see it was for par. He is through 5 holes. He is 5 under on the tournament through 5 holes. Rory McIlroy, excuse me. And he is at 3rd at 4 under. And there's a couple other guys tied at 4 under as well. And if you're looking for some of the other big names, the world number one, Scottie Scheffler, he's probably going to miss the cut. He is very high over par, 6 over par. The projected cut right now is +4. Scottie Scheffler was 6 over par. Dustin Johnson, also 6 over par. Adam Scott, 7 over par. So some of the big names in golf struggled this week in the first 2 days. Zach Johnson, 11 over par. Like, there's some big names down there. Daniel Berger, 13 over par. And, I mean, just some big-time names down there that really struggled in these first 2 rounds. But you look at the leaderboard again. Justin Thomas at 6 under par, shot 3 under on the day. Back-to-back 67s. He is your leader coming into round 3. As of right now, you have Zalatoris in second with 5 under, and McIlroy, Anser, and Pereira all at 4 under, tied at 3rd. And looking for Tiger Woods here. He struggled at the end of his round yesterday. Jordan Spieth is at 2 over, so he is still in the cut line as of right now. Tiger Woods, 3 over par. He's 1 under on the day. Ended up being 4 over yesterday. So as of right now, Tiger's still making the cut, but the projected cut line is +4. We'll see how he finishes up, how his body holds up as well down the stretch here in round 2 of the PGA Championship. And now moving on to our last headline, it's the continued conversation of Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher. Again, you can call in and give your 2 cents about this whole situation or anything else going on in the sports world. I would love to hear from you, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. What did we learn from this entire situation from Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher, okay? What did we learn? Now that it's been a couple of days, right? It's been 2 days since Saban said his thing. It's been a day since Jimbo had his response. We've heard an apology from Nick Saban, and the entire sports world has had a chance to react and give their opinions about it, myself included. But what have we learned now that all of this happened? Well, there's a couple of things, okay? There's a couple of things. Obviously, these are conversations that need to be had. Because most people would say, some wouldn't, but a lot of people around the game of college football specifically would say that NIL is out of control. It is. It's out of control. Now, guys like Jimbo Fisher, they don't think so. In Texas A&M, they don't think it's out of control. They're 100% happy with how it is. But 95% of the college football world and college sports world would agree that the NIL has gone farther and doing a lot worse than what it was supposed to be. And it's doing things that it was not created to do. Okay? That is what we've learned from this. We've also learned that the NCAA is borderline worthless and can't do anything about it because they have no enforcement, they have no authority, and they just don't care. obviously, look what they have created. They have created a monster. It was a great idea, and the NIL is a good idea, but not to this extent. And it's really getting exposed right now that the NCAA can't do anything about it. It can't do anything about the schools that it governs, the people that it governs, or the rules that it creates. They can't do anything. And so, if the governing body, no matter what we're talking about, if the governing body who controls the organizations, the people, and the rules can't enforce those rules and control the groups and the people, if they can't do any of that, then why are they there? Right? Why are they there if they can't run the system? If they can't govern the system? If they can't do that, they should be gone. And I think that's going to happen. I think it's going to happen. I think at least the Power Five schools and conferences are eventually going to come together and give a major you-know-what to the NCAA and say, we don't need you or want you anymore because you're hurting us more than you're helping us. And I think it's going to happen. In the next 10 years, it's going to happen. The NCAA will be no more. For big-time schools, at least. They may still have the smaller schools and programs, but they're not going to have the big schools anymore. And then, when they lose all of that money, I think they'll eventually go under. Because the NCAA makes so much money to be so bad at their job. They already created NIL, and then they just let it go. They just said, here you go. Have fun. And that's exactly what they've done. And it has turned into this horrible monster that is created in what we see right now with the NIL. And they can't bring it back, and they can't make new rules to go back on the things that are already happening. So they've already screwed up, right? That is what we've learned as well. The NCAA is basically non-existent. What we've also learned is there is going to be separation from schools and programs due to NIL money and sponsorships. Some people don't think so, but I do. I think there will be major separation because how would there not be? The rich will get richer. That's how it's going to be. Not to just a full extent. It's not going to get to the point where every single five-star goes to Texas and Texas A&M and that's it. But they are definitely going to start pulling the majority of them. And then what does that mean for Auburn? Well, that means Auburn's going to be in a really tough spot. Schools like Auburn are going to be in a really, really tough spot. Alabama. While Nick Saban is there, they won't struggle. But when he retires in about 5 years, then they're going to struggle. Because he's the only reason players go to Alabama is for him. But what happens when he's not there anymore? They're going to run to the money. Players are going to run to the money. And that is Texas, Texas A&M, USC, UCLA, those types of schools that have more money coming in than what they know what to do with. And so if you don't think that it's going to make a separation, let me know. I'd love to know why. If you don't think so, call in. I'd love to hear from you. But I think it's going to cause a major separation in programs. And there will be a division. There will be. The rich will get richer. And I don't see how it won't. Because now Texas A&M and schools like Texas A&M can use the thing that they have the most of, which is money. They don't even have to have the best coach in college football because they don't. They have a decent coach. Jimbo's decent. He's a decent coach, right? He's had a great program. They've got more money than a lot of schools combined. And now it is legal to use it. And again, it's not Texas A&M using the money. It is the boosters and the donors and the businesses and the collectives that are using the money and providing the money for athletes. But they're doing it for Texas A&M. They're basically doing it for the school. The school's buying players through collectives and through businesses and through NIL. That's how they're doing it. So, no, the school is not physically writing the check, but the school makes the guarantee. And that's it right there. That's 100% it. The school doesn't write the check, but they make the guarantee and they make the sell, right? Because now when they go and recruit players before they get on that plane, they have the number in their head of how much money they're going to have in their NIL pool and what they can offer to five-star player quarterback from Louisiana, right? They know that. And so what we learned from this entire explosion from Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher is that there is a major problem here, and it has coaches scared to death. Nick Saban is worried and shaking in his boots. Why? Because he's threatened, and he knows that times are changing, and this is not a shot at Nick Saban. He's not the only one. I guarantee Brian Harsin is extremely worried about this as well, because now you can't just worry about who's the best coach and the best program. Now it's about who's got the most money. Who's got the most money? Because they're going to get the best players. It may not be right now, but it might be, because look at Texas A&M. They just signed the best recruiting class in the history of college football. And it's only going to get better. What's stopping them? What is stopping them? And I already told you, as time goes on, over the years, players' mindset, high school players and recruits' mindsets are going to start switching. They're not going to care about football anymore, not as much as they have been. They're going to start looking for that dollar sign. Who can give me the most money? I don't care if I get better. I just want to get paid. That's what's going to happen. That's what we've learned from all of this, is that there's a major problem. NIL somehow has got to be regulated. It's got to be changed. The NCAA is not going to be the one to do it. We've learned that. We've figured out the NCAA is just borderline non-existent at this point. And we've also learned that the rich will get richer. Whoever has the most money is going to have the best players. They're going to have the best teams. Now, you still got to have good coaches to produce and to develop and make good teams to win. But at what point are they going to quit caring about winning and just caring about the money? Let's take a break. Our first one of hour number two here on the Friday edition of On the Line. You could call in, be a part of the show. 334-321-1390. Let's take a break. You're listening to On the Line. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Jacob Goins with you on the Friday edition of the show. Is it supposed to rain here in the Auburn-Opelika area? It's starting to get a little dark outside. Hopefully it's not supposed to rain. I hope not. I don't know if it is or not. I haven't looked, but the clouds are starting to move in a little bit. It's a little gray out there looking out the window here in the studio at Auburn Networks, but no, it says there's only a 15% chance. It's not supposed to. It's supposed to be nice this weekend, or except on Sunday. It's supposed to be nice tomorrow. Sunny and 87, partly cloudy. They are calling for a chance of rain on Sunday, but no, I don't know. It just started getting dark outside, so hopefully it doesn't rain or drizzle or anything like that. But hope you're having a great Friday. I appreciate you tuning in here to the Friday edition of On the Line. It's been a great show. If you missed any of it, just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. You can call in, be a part of the show, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. Lots to talk about with NIL, Saban, Jimbo, SEC, NCAA, and all of that. And to kind of wrap up this conversation, it's going to be an ongoing one, and what's really going to be interesting is the coaches' meetings in Destin coming up in a few weeks, and then SEC Media Days, when that goes down as well. Alabama and Texas A&M are not on the same days, but you know that this will be a major conversation at these conferences and at SEC Media Days. So really excited to see all of that go down. And then, of course, Alabama hosts Texas A&M October 8th. This upcoming season, Texas A&M will travel to Tuscaloosa. It may be a bloodbath, folks. It may be a bloodbath. I think Alabama, just right now, I mean, look, Saban's going to have those boys ready to play. Jimbo will too, but Alabama will be on another level. Bryant Denny will have 100,000 plus ready to go, and that's going to be It may be a massacre. It might just be a massacre. It may be a close game. That's also the same weekend that Auburn goes to Georgia. So what a great weekend of SEC football that's going to be. Auburn visits Georgia, and Texas A&M visits Alabama. So two big-time games in the SEC. And I look for Auburn to be 5-0 going into that Athens trip, into that Georgia game. I know we are a long way away from that, but just looking at the schedule a little bit, I like Auburn to be 5-0 going into Georgia. I really do. You start off the year with two of your, you know, non-conference cupcake games, whatever you want to call them. Auburn, you know, win those two, get your plays right, get you, you know, your rotations down, and get everything worked out, get all the kinks worked out, because then Penn State comes to town week three for wrapping up the home and home with the Penn State Nittany Lions. Of course, Auburn went up there last year. Fantastic game. Auburn was not able to pull it off, but fantastic game between Auburn and Penn State. The Nittany Lions come down to the Plains week three. I look for Auburn to win that game. Penn State is not that good. They weren't that good last year. Auburn should have won that game on the road last year. Auburn's going to be at home this year. I expect that to be a night game. I look for Auburn to win that game. I really do. Then you have Missouri at home for your first SEC game. That's a great opening game in the SEC. You get a Missouri team that won't be great, but will play you kind of tough, but you're going to be better than. So if you're Auburn, try to get a big SEC win under your belt. Then you play LSU. But again, at home, you have five straight home games. LSU is going to be tough. That's going to be a toss-up, I think. Between Penn State and LSU, Auburn will more than likely lose one of those games. If I just had to guess on May 20th, you know, we still are, 106 days away from college football. But, you know, just talking about the first couple of games of Auburn's schedule before they go to Georgia the same week that Texas A&M visits Alabama. And look, Auburn, between Penn State and LSU, realistically, they probably lose one of those games. If you lose both, it's going to be really bad and really ugly. Auburn has got to be at least 4-1 in those five games. If you go 3-2, the season's probably doomed. And that's why I've said the first five games are the most important of the entire season. But I look for Auburn to win the Penn State game, and then the LSU game, I would put it on a coin toss, a coin flip. You know, you never really know what you're going to get between those two teams. It's a great matchup. You got Brian Kelly down at LSU now, and of course, Brian Harsin in his second year at Auburn. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I look for Auburn to win both of those games. I think Auburn can be 5-0 going to Georgia. I really do. I really do think Auburn can be 5-0. And how big would that be going to Georgia 5-0? Not that you expect to win that Georgia game, but you're feeling pretty good going into that game. That same weekend, Texas A&M visits Alabama. You know that the intensity of that matchup will just be through the absolute roof. And the pregame meeting between Saban and Jimbo Fisher at center field, or at the 50-yard line, will probably be pretty brief. And the handshake afterwards will be even shorter. And the intensity of 100,000-plus at Bryant-Denny Stadium, they are going to be on their game that day. So really looking forward to that. We're 106 days away. I've got it written down. 106 days away from September 3rd, the start of the college football season. I cannot wait. I'm so excited. And it'll be here before you know it, folks. It'll be here before you know it. You really do the countdown to 100 days, then you do the countdown to SEC Media Days, and then after that, you do the countdown to fall camp, and after that, you're like a month out. And then it just time just flies. School gets started back up, and you really start hearing predictions. People really start talking about the schedule, and that's when it really, really picks up and starts getting to be a whole lot of fun. So 106 days away. Hold on, folks. Hold on. We're almost there. And it's going to be so much fun once football season comes along. High school football season will be starting up as well. I'm really excited about that, doing play-by-play for the Lee Scott Warriors. So really excited for that. Really excited for the college football season, man. We're so close. 106 days. Just hang on. We'll get there eventually. Let's take a break. 30 more minutes left in the Friday edition of On the Line. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Jacob Goins with you on the Friday edition of the show. 30 more minutes left in hour number two here on ESPN 106.7 in the Auburn-Opelika area and on Fox Sports Central, Alabama on 98.3 up through Birmingham and Sylacauga. Want you to listen in. We've got the interview from Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network to get you ready and prepared as Auburn softball begins its NCAA regional action against Louisiana, and Auburn baseball has its weekend series against the Kentucky Wildcats at Lexington, or in Lexington, I should say, at Kentucky. So sit back, relax, enjoy. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. Our good buddy Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. Hillman, you're back feeling better and ready to go. We appreciate you and your time as always. Before we talk about baseball, I want to talk about Auburn softball a little bit. Their run in the SEC tournament was very short and not so sweet. What happened, man?
Yeah, you get matched up with a very motivated and talented Missouri team that was probably underseeded. I think the whole storyline with Missouri was how they could have been a top four seed, but there's unfortunate scenarios that they had to deal with in Tuscaloosa that kind of kept them from being that high of a seed. So you end up playing a team that's probably underseeded, and that team goes on to the SEC tournament championship, loses to Tennessee. But I still look at it as the fact that the offense just did not get going against a tough pitcher for Missouri. So yet something that is a little concerning going into regionals, but I don't think it's something that will be a consistent factor.
Well, Jacob, this was a problem that Auburn had to end the regular season in their last SEC series before going to the SEC tournament, correct?
That is correct.
Right, and so you know, what does Auburn do to get the bats going again? Because all season long for the Auburn softball team, that's been the strength, has been the bats.
Yeah, for sure, and I look at it as the lineup continues to change a little bit. It's not the best circumstance to be under, as you know, you're sitting here in regionals, you want to have that lineup set up, but it still just goes back to the injuries that have occurred. And whenever those happened, the lineup had to shift around and things weren't as comfortable. So you got to look at your best hitters. You got to look at SEC Freshman of the Year, Bree Ellis. You've got to look at Michaela Packer, Lindsey Garcia, and then Carly McConaughey that in that nine spot. And you've got to hope that those four, the core, can really get things going for the rest of the lineup, because the rest of the lineup, obviously not, like I said, not the core, but it's a contagious thing with this team where when one or two girls are hitting well, the rest of the lineup is doing fine. So if any combination of those four can get it going, then I really believe in the rest of the lineup to get things going again. And this is going to be a tough regional. Clemson has a great pitching staff. Does not allow a lot of home runs. Auburn hits a lot of home runs. So one will have to give if Auburn is to face Clemson. But first, you have to get through Louisiana. Louisiana is a 45-win team that's won its third straight conference championship. The last time Auburn played Louisiana, 2015 Super Regional, Auburn won that 2-1 to advance the Women's College World Series for the first time. These are teams with history. Now, of course, Clemson is hosting its first regional of all time. That's going to be a fired-up crowd. It's a team that made it to the ACC championship and fell to Florida State. Florida State's the number two overall seed in the country, so they are in a position to do something special as well.
Talking to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, I'm glad you started to allude to it. I was going to ask you, set the scene for me, what is on deck for Auburn softball in the regional, but you're talking about Clemson and Louisiana as well.
Yeah, and obviously UNC Wilmington will be there as well. Auburn's 5-0 against that program, but It's a tough regional. Clemson's the 10th seed, so if Auburn is to advance, they'll go to the 7th seed, Oklahoma State, who just won the Big 12 championship for the first time against Oklahoma. It's going to be a tough path for the Tigers, and I think that you have to look at it one game at a time, because if you look past Louisiana, you're not going to win that game. Louisiana is a tough program that has been good for years and years and years, and it's a very established program. So I really want to see Auburn come out, and getting a win against them would be a good sign going forward. And I think that getting that game one win is the most important win of the regional, because once you do that, then you've got a chance to go and beat Clemson in what might be kind of a pressure situation for them. Like I said, hosting its first regional ever, maybe there's a little bit of pressure on him and Auburn can apply it.
Talking to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, let's talk about the Auburn baseball team as they had a big series at home this weekend against Alabama. Look, I said technically they swept because they won two games, right? I mean, there was a winner and a loser in two of the games. Obviously, Sunday got rained out. Let's start with the Friday and Saturday games. What'd you see from Auburn that you liked as they pick up two victories against Alabama?
I mean, I had to start with the bullpen on Saturday. Eight innings of shutout baseball after Trace Bright didn't have his stuff and just coming out there. Tommy Sheehan, John Armstrong, guys like that, the entire bullpen. Chase also got the save and gave Blake Burkhalter an extra day of rest. It was a huge moment for this Auburn bullpen because it was guys that have needed to step up. It wasn't your usual Carson Skipper, Blake Burkhalter 1-2 punch on Saturday. It was eight innings of guys that have shown their stuff, but not consistently. It was just awesome to see them go out and really seal the deal against Alabama as the offense had to chip away throughout that game. And once it did, it was just a safe situation that Chase Alsop really dominated. So I was so happy to see the bullpen perform the way it did. That includes Friday. It was nice to see Blake Burkhalter back out there and get his SEC leading saves again. Because Mason Barnett has done a good job. I think Mason Barnett's moved into that Friday spot nicely, and it's not perfect yet, but that's gonna take some time. And I think having these 2 weeks and this upcoming week to have another start is going to really help Barnett going into postseason play. So I was really pleased with the team this weekend, and that was also – it was an off week for Sonny DeShera. I mean, Sonny dropped below 400 with his batting average for the first time in forever, and – the offense was still good enough to get the two wins, and you never know what would have happened on Sunday in the bottom of the fifth inning with the bases loaded with Bobby Pierce up to bat. So you really look at it as a successful weekend that could have been a three-game sweep, but you've got to deal with a two-game sweep.
And, you know, last week I had talked about how big the Friday night game was in a series like this against your in-state rival. How big was it for Auburn to get the Friday night win going into the rest of the weekend?
Yeah, you can tell how fired up they were. It was a one-run win and really just a big, big win where a team comes through late. And even though it's against an Alabama team that's not up to expectations, it's still an Alabama team that is good on the offensive end and has enough pitching to get things done. And also, they've got big games upcoming because they're still fighting to get into the SEC tournament. And obviously, that goes into NCAA postseason play. So they were motivated, and they really showed that throughout that game, and it was a back-and-forth affair, and Auburn came out on top. So getting that Friday night win, especially in front of the crowd that was there, I mean, I was so excited to see the amount of people there. It was the third biggest series in Auburn history, highest attendance series, and I was just pleased with how the crowd was into it as well. They were there, and they were into it. So it was a big deal for that, and it really encourages me for regional play if Auburn is to host and how that crowd is going to respond to that.
Talking to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, Auburn gets the win Friday night. They come out Saturday, and they go down 4-0 in the first inning. How were they able to respond with the bats and with the pitching? You talked about it a little bit, but especially with the bats to come back and win that one 6-4.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of chipping away. You had guys get little base hits, just knock them out there, and even some small ball as well. And I was really happy with the way Blake Rambush and Brooks Carlson played this weekend, especially in that Saturday game. They came to play and they really made a difference. And the lineup was moved around a little bit, if you didn't notice. Leading off was Brody Moore and then Sonny DeShera hitting second, Blake Rambush in the three spot. Cason Howell moved down to the sixth spot. And it was interesting to see how that played out. And I thought I liked the lineup change. I would assume that Sonny DeShera can hit pretty much anywhere in the lineup and that he'll be fine in that two spot, but we'll have to see if there's any more adjustments made to that. And like you said, the pitching was just phenomenal after that first inning. Tommy Sheehan, John Armstrong, Chase Alsop, those are the three names that just pop up into mind, and I'm so pleased with how they performed this past weekend. And going forward, it's a big deal because Carson Skipper, they got a full weekend's rest. Blake Burkhalter only had to pitch once, and I really think that going forward, that is going to make them so much more confident. They know, okay, there's at least three other guys in the bullpen that we can rely on, and we're not having to pitch 3 days a weekend, because that was the case back against South Carolina and even against Tennessee. Obviously, Burkholzer got hurt in game one, so he didn't, but Skipper was pitching all weekend. I think it's a big deal to have those guys not having to pitch every single day.
And Hillman, you know, Auburn wins game one and game two. They win the series, but the conversation coming out of the weekend is the what could have been yesterday, with the game being a no contest in the fifth inning. Game was tied at one. Auburn had the bases loaded. You know, what's your take on that about, you know, what happened, and does it hurt or benefit Auburn?
Yeah, it doesn't. It does not benefit Auburn. I don't think it matters that much. I think it's just kind of a neutral thing where, well, you don't get the extra win, but it's also just you're at the point where you're hoping to get a top four seed in the SEC tournament. It would have been nice to have a chance at some chaos going on and maybe overtaking Texas A&M or Arkansas in the SEC West, but you're going to need a lot of help from other teams like Ole Miss and Alabama this next weekend against Arkansas and A&M. So it's not the biggest deal in the world. I don't think it's going to impact the way the committee looks at it. I think it's just more unfortunate for the teams and how that series ends. It was a competitive series. Yeah, Auburn had already wrapped up the series win, but Alabama's playing for that SEC tournament spot. Auburn's playing for regional seeding positioning. And these two teams are in the same state, and you can't let them resume after 7 o'clock? I don't know. It's an unfortunate ruling that I've seen reasons why. I mean, there was an Auburn-Alabama game back in 2017. It never stopped or had to restart, but that game was played well into the night, and I understand it because it is a Sunday. But also, classes aren't in session. Alabama's just a 3-hour bus trip away. It's really unfortunate that they were unable to resume that game, and we'll never know what could have happened because, hey, you never know. Alabama, they could have gotten out of that jam, but Auburn also could have scored several runs and dominated that game. So you don't know, and you'll never know, but I don't think it really impacts Auburn that much. It doesn't help Auburn, but I don't think there's too much of a negative impact on it.
Well, that's kind of the point that I had, too. I mean, you never truly know. Auburn could have scored 3 runs, but then they could have blown it. Alabama could have gotten out of it. There were so many different ways that could have gone down. But there is also, you know, always will be the question, well, what if Auburn would have swept, right? But it is what it is. Talking to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. Moving on from the series win against Alabama, Auburn's got a midweek game tomorrow against Samford. What do you expect from that? And then we'll get into the Kentucky series.
Yeah, that's an in-state opponent that is always played. Auburn tells, of course, Casey Dunn isn't there anymore, but I mean, that was always a big thing was Casey Dunn against his old team, always competing well with that Samford team. Samford, Auburn's played them once this year, beat them. Sonny DeShera, Brooks Carlson, they played for Samford. They transferred in from there, and they'll be looking to beat them again like they did earlier this season in a midweek game, and I really think that this is the last midweek game of the season. Auburn's, I think, is 9-1. Those midweek games, maybe 10-1. And that's such a big stat for the committee when it comes to NCAA tournament seeding. So you want to finish that midweek slate out strong and really finish that on a high note.
And then, of course, the last SEC series of the year of the regular season at Kentucky. That's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. How does that affect this at all, if any, against this Auburn baseball team? Instead of being Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it does. It would matter had Auburn switched up the pitching rotation a little bit, but they've been consistent keeping Trace Bright on Saturday, Justin Gonzalez on Sunday, even with the injuries to Hayden Mullins. So I don't think it impacted that much. It's just one day short of the 7-day rest that they usually get. And really, pitchers only need about 5 days. So I don't think that's going to be a big issue. But I do look at it as a big series for Kentucky because, like Alabama, playing for their SEC tournament lives this weekend. There's a lot moving around the SEC standings. Ole Miss coming out of nowhere. Vanderbilt is surging. So for Auburn, you're trying to hold on to that top four spot so that you don't have to play on Tuesday of the SEC tournament. Kentucky's just trying to get to Hoover. So there's going to be some do-or-die games this upcoming weekend. And obviously Kentucky, they show they beat Tennessee 2 games out of 3, but backed it up with a series loss to South Carolina. You don't know what you're going to get out of these Wildcats, and we know we're going to get out of Auburn. So it'll be a big weekend for Auburn to go out and hopefully get one more road series win.
Talking to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. One more question, and I'll let you get out of here. What does Auburn have to do well? I guess, you know, the mindset as well for Auburn at Kentucky this weekend to get the series win and to try to solidify that top four spot in Hoover and also get to host a regional.
Yeah, I think if you keep doing what you've been doing, then you're going to be fine. Of course, the starting pitching, I think that you can find some more consistency with that. I thought Gonzalez did really well in the few innings of work he got yesterday, backing up two consecutive losses. The Tennessee game was a quality start. Arkansas, not so much. So I thought he backed that up pretty well. Trace Bright, he needs to bounce back. But we've seen that from him. If he has a bad outing, he usually bounces back from it well. Then I think Barnett just keeps doing what he's doing, eat up innings at the beginning of the game and let the bullpen do its thing, because I feel like now Auburn has five guys you can rely on in that bullpen. I wasn't so confident you had that many before this past weekend, but what I saw from them on Saturday, that was such an impressive showing that I can trust them going forward. And as far as the bats go, I just want to see Sonny DeShera get back above the 400 line. He dropped below that, and I want to see him get above that and have that stat to his name. But I think the bats are going to be completely fine moving forward.
Well, Jacob Hillman, we appreciate you and your time as always. Let everybody know where they can keep up with you and everything you're doing.
Yeah, y'all follow me on Twitter at Jacob Hillman AU. As I won't be in Hoover, but I'll be keeping track of all that as well as the Kentucky series this upcoming weekend.
Well, good deal, man. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Yep, you as well. Thank you, Jacob.
Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins wrapping up the Friday edition of the show. Got an update for you from Auburn softball in the NCAA regionals. They defeat Louisiana 4-3 in a complete seven innings of the game. They win 4-3, and they will be moving on into the winner's bracket. Auburn will now face Clemson on Saturday at noon Central Time, and the winner of that will advance to the championship game on Sunday. So Auburn softball picks up their first victory in the NCAA regional. They will play Clemson tomorrow at noon. And you just heard Jacob Hillman talk about how important game one is for Auburn softball this week. They get the victory against Louisiana 4-3, and they will play Clemson tomorrow at noon Central Time. Television still being announced. It's TBA, so not sure if it'll be fully televised or not, but Auburn softball, they win their first game of the regional. They will play Clemson tomorrow at noon. Updating you also on the Auburn baseball team as they are currently in game one against Kentucky up in Lexington. Game two will be tonight at 5 o'clock. Auburn trails Kentucky 5-1 in the top of the eighth. Auburn was able to put on a run in the sixth, but Kentucky got it right back. It's 5-1 Wildcats on top of the Tigers, top of the eighth in game one. Again, game two will be tonight at 5 o'clock in Lexington. So, look, if you're Auburn, doesn't look like you're coming back from this one. You might be able to, but I doubt it. Just try to get a little momentum, and you've got to win the next two. These are games that you should win. You're the better team, and you need them. You need these wins if you're Auburn, if you want to have the chance at hosting the regional and the super regional. So Auburn softball gets its first victory of the regional tournament. They defeat Louisiana 4-3. They will play Clemson tomorrow at noon. Auburn baseball currently trails Kentucky 5-1 in game one of the three-game series in Lexington. My final take here on this Friday afternoon is this. The NCAA is basically non-existent. They don't do their jobs. They can't govern. They have no control. And so why are they there? Why is the NCAA still a thing? Why are major schools and programs still a part of the NCAA? There's no reason. There's no reason for them to be a part of the NCAA anymore. The NCAA makes too much money. They have too much power, but yet they can't use it. And when they do have the chance to do something right, they screw it up. Every time it never fails. So what is stopping these schools and programs from ditching the NCAA? I don't know, but it's coming. That day is coming. Eventually, the NCAA will no longer exist. It shouldn't even exist now. The NCAA, their power they don't use. They have no governing rule. They can't control their own people, their own rules, and their own programs. The NCAA is going to have a harsh end at some point. It's coming, I'm telling you. That's it for the Friday edition of On the Line. We'll be back on Monday, 2 o'clock. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.